of Christmases Long, Long Ago is my new book, arriving for the 2025 Christmas season. Find out what Christmas was like centuries ago. Sneak preview, it was weird, and spooky, and rowdy, kind of gross sometimes. Find it wherever books are sold, in hardcover from Lions Press, and audiobook from Recorded Books. It's Christmas as you've never seen it before, and it makes a great gift. I'm Brian Earle. This is Christmas Past. Annie's birthday made the papers. Reporters picked up the story and carried it from Vermont to Texas, from the St. Johnsbury Caledonian to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram to the Pittsburgh Dispatch. In big city broadsheets, in small town weeklies. It was the kind of story that editors tucked into the corner of the front page, something light to break up the headlines about storms and labor strikes. They'd heard the story, and they made it news. It was 1891. Annie Ide, a teenager from Vermont, was celebrating a birthday. For most of her young life, Annie hated her birthday. She was born on December 25th, Christmas Day, a gift to her parents, but a cruel trick on a girl who longed for a day of her own. She shared her famous birthday with such figures as Isaac Newton, Clara Barton, and, of course, Jesus. While other children had a day that belonged entirely to them, a day for laughter and party dresses and being the center of the world, Annie's day belonged to everybody else. No cake, just Christmas pudding. No party, just another place at the dinner table. A birthday that came with a sigh. Poor Annie had no use for birthdays. Not hers, anyway. But birthdays matter. They're our own small claim on the passing of time. The one day the world turns to you and says, you are here, and you are known. Christmas had cheated her out of a birthday for 14 years, until 1891. That's when her father, Henry, mentioned her predicament to a friend. And it wasn't just any friend. Henry's job had taken him from Vermont to a faraway island in the Pacific, where fate and politics had introduced him to a man as improbable as this story. A man who knew something about lost things. A man named Robert. Robert's story began on the cobbled streets of Edinburgh in Scotland. He was born to a family of lighthouse engineers, men who built beacons to hold back the dark. But Robert was different. He dreamt of travel and adventure, of sunlight and open seas. His body, however, had other plans. He was a sickly child, plagued by fever and cough, and his parents urged him toward a safer life. He studied law to make them happy, even passed the bar. But practicing law would have been a kind of death for a man like Robert. So he turned his back on the courtroom and set out into the world with little more than a pen and a restless heart. He wrote about his travels across England, the French Riviera, and the United States, always chasing warmer weather, always trying to outrun his illness. On a canoe voyage through France and Belgium, he met Fanny, an American with children from a previous marriage. She was 40, he was 29. And they married in 1880, even though Robert was, in his own words, a mere complication of cough and bones, much fitter for an emblem of mortality than a bridegroom. They married and eventually settled in the South Seas, on the island of Samoa, where the air was thick with salt and the palm trees swayed like metronomes keeping time with the tide. It was there in 1889 that they built a home and planted roots in the Red Samoan soil, where they purchased more than 300 acres and built the island's first two-story house. It was there that Robert became known as Tusitala, or the Teller of Tales, to the Samoan people, and it was there that he met Henry Clay Ide, Annie's father, appointed by President Benjamin Harrison to serve as commissioner to Samoa. Robert and Henry became fast friends. One day, Henry mentioned that his daughter hated her birthday. Born on Christmas Day, he explained, she'd spent every year of her life feeling overshadowed. For Robert, an idea bloomed. He was a lawyer, after all. Why not put that training to use? On June 19th, 1891, Robert sat down and wrote a legalese-sounding contract. Among other things, it read,
in consideration that I have no further use for a birthday, I do hereby transfer and make over from myself to the said Annie H. Ide, all and whole of my rights and privileges in the 13th day of November, formerly my birthday, now and henceforth the birthday of the said Annie H. Ide, to have, hold, exercise and enjoy the same in the customary manner, by the sporting of fine raiment, eating of rich food, and receiving of gifts, compliments, and copies of verse, according to the manner of our ancestors.
There was even this interesting fallback clause written into the contract.
And in case the said A.H. Ide shall neglect or contravene either of the above conditions, I hereby revoke the donation and transfer my rights in the said birthday to the President of the United States of America, for the time being.
With a stroke of his pen, he gave his birthday away. Gave it freely, like a present placed beneath a tree, waiting to be unwrapped. And so, in June of 1891, under skies a world away from tinsel and snow, a man who told stories gave a unique gift. A birthday gift, and a Christmas gift too, in a way. A day, a moment, a quiet kindness wrapped in words. Annie finally had a birthday of her own. The papers reported that she was overjoyed. She had received a birthday gift, literally the gift of a birthday. That following November 13th, she celebrated her first birthday, her first real one anyway, real to her. In her thank you letter to Robert, she asked, "Now that you have no birthday, and I technically have two, will I age twice as fast and you not at all?" The following year, Henry Ide brought his children to Samoa. Annie and Robert celebrated her new birthday together, once with a grand Samoan-style feast, and then again the next year. But that phrase that Robert had written into his letter, that he had no further use for a birthday, that cut deeper than anyone could have known at the time. Because in 1894, at just 44 years old, Robert died. A lifetime of illness had finally caught up with him. In his 44 years, he had lived many lives, none of them long enough. But in that time, he had authored 13 novels, wrote history, poetry, essays, short stories. He was a literary celebrity, traveled the world, befriended the royal family of Hawaii, delighted readers with tales of adventure. Years before he wrote that letter that changed Annie Ide's life, he'd introduced readers to Long John Silver and Treasure Island, had thrilled audiences with The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Robert Louis Stevenson is remembered today as a teller of tales, a wanderer who mapped the dark corners of the human soul and left behind stories as enduring as the tides. But to Annie Ide, he was always remembered as something far simpler and yet far greater. A man who gave her a piece of time all her own. A gift so rare it felt like magic, wrapped in ink and paper and tied with a ribbon of friendship she never forgot. There's a coda to this story. Annie Ide, who later became Annie Ide Cochran, died in 1945. She never had children of her own, but she wanted to pass down this one-of-a-kind gift from Robert. She gave it to her niece, Anita Leslie, who went on to become an accomplished writer herself. And Anita, in turn, passed it on to her granddaughter, Heather Finn. And, well...
Hi, this is Heather.
Okay, so tell me about this. Can we call it an inheritance of yours?
Yeah, I suppose, because, I mean, it was in my granny put it in her will, so, and then it was willed to her by her aunt. So, yeah, it kind of does feel like an inheritance.
The actual original letter from Robert Louis Stevenson is in a museum in Vermont. So, what is it that you actually inherited?
It's the birthday. So on the 13th of November every year, we celebrate it as a birthday. So like it's my RLS birthday. So yeah.
Was this something that you grew up knowing about? Did you and your grandmother celebrate the birthday together at any point?
We didn't celebrate. I did. I remember knowing about it, but until she died, you know, I'd never celebrated it with her because it was probably kind of drinks and nighttime things. But yeah, I mean, I've always known. It was always there in the background. Yeah.
Do you celebrate the November 13th now?
Yeah, we do. Every year we have to. We have to celebrate it or it goes back to the President of the United States. So yeah, that's part of the, you've got to celebrate it or you lose it.
How do you celebrate it?
Champagne. So we always pop a bottle of champagne and my mom likes to celebrate it with me. So My husband is a good cook, so he'll often cook a nice meal. Yeah, but we always celebrate. We don't miss it. So it's a kind of important family tradition.
Why did it go to you and not your mom?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not really sure. I was pretty close to my granny, and maybe she just thought it was more fun to give to a child rather than an adult. So I don't know. I mean, yeah.
And is everyone in the family well-versed in Robert Louis Stevenson?
Yeah, we're all kind of, I mean, I would have read Kidnapped. I didn't read Treasure Island, I think, because I'd just seen the film and the TV series as a kid. But we're all a fan. Yeah, we're all fans.
And so what are your plans for the birthday when it's time for you to pass it on?
Well, this is the thing. When people have asked, I mean, I suppose I leave it to my daughter. I have a 9-year-old daughter. If I get to live long enough and she has children and she had a daughter, then maybe I leave it to her and follow the tradition that way. So, yeah.
Oh, and that letter or legal contract or whatever it was that started it all, it's still intact. It belongs to the collection of the Fairbanks Museum in Vermont. Christmas Past is produced in wonderful Willow Glen, California by yours truly, Brian Earle. Thanks very much to Heather Finn. Thanks also to Gaz Kerr, who performed the voiceover as Robert Louis Stevenson. And of course, thank you for listening. I hope your Christmas season is off to a wonderful start, and I'm looking forward to spending the rest of it with you. We're doing things just a little differently this year to celebrate season 10 of the podcast and the release of my new book. But some things will never change, like how I want to hear about your Christmas memories. I'll be sharing them with the Christmas Past family this season in special episodes dedicated just to them. All you have to do is record yourself speaking into your phone's voice memo app and send it to christmaspastpodcast@gmail.com. Keep it reasonably short, clean, and family-friendly, and be sure to say your name and where you're from. You can drop me a line anytime. I always love to hear from you, and I try to respond to every message I get. Look for Christmas Past on your favorite social media platform, and if you don't see me there, and you think I should be, get in touch and let me know. And hey, if you're really feeling the Christmas spirit, why not help more people discover the show? It's as easy as telling a friend about it or leaving a rating and review. If you do leave a review, I'll send you a Christmas Past sticker, and a handwritten Christmas card is my way of saying thanks. Get in touch for details. And until we meet again, may your days be merry and bright.